65.
The bill applies to income earned in Pennsylvania by active duty military personnel beginning in 2012. If it passes the House, Senator Baker says she's hopeful Governor Tom Corbett will sign it into law before the end of the current legislative session. I'm David Payne.
Taking a look at AccuWeather, mostly cloudy tonight with a shower and thunderstorm, a low 65. Tomorrow and Friday, cloudy and humid with showers and thunderstorms, some heavy downpours each day. The high tomorrow, 78. Friday's high, 82. Find more news all the time online at WKOK.com. It's back to the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
On this beautiful Wednesday, it is great to be with you. I'm going to Hazleton tonight. Speaking to an awards banquet. Maybe I'm getting an award. No, I'm just kidding.
I'd be good. I'd be happy for you.
Sure. Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. Tomorrow, Guy Gadowski, the Penn State hockey coach, on the show. We're also going to talk to a representative tomorrow, the PIAA. Bunch of questions that Kevin submitted out of bitterness.
I've got a lot of questions over the years.
About the PIAA. Well, we'll be talking to her tomorrow.
You know the one question I want to know the answer to. How soon for the 5A division?
Oh, 5A. And who do you want in 5A? Charter schools?
Yes.
Or Catholic schools?
I want private and charter schools in their own division.
Why are they ruining your fun?
Yes, as a matter of fact, they are. They draw from a bigger area.
So, no, is the key to you is eliminating competition, not defeating it?
No, it's not on an equal playing field, Stephen. Don't get me started.
I completely agree with you.
But don't get me started.
Oh, sure. No, go ahead. I'll just sit back and listen.
It's just not an even playing field. It can be an evil playing field, but it's not an even one at all. You have AAA schools that can only draw from a certain area.
I agree with you, okay, completely. I think that if you are in a I think there needs to be a public school division and Division V, a private school division, and that would be charter schools, Catholic schools, whatever. I think they need to have their own division. Because, again, when you look at what has gone on, I believe in basketball. Let's take basketball as an example.
Basketball is a big one, yeah.
Of the 8 schools that were in the state championship, boys and girls, 6 of the 8 were either charter or Catholic schools.
That is correct.
And I don't like the fact that, you know, you can, for example, get somebody to go to your school and play for you. For example, I know, let's take Bishop Guilfoyle and Altoona, okay, center of the state. So I'm not talking about a border one here. You know, they could have kids from State College got down there and they can play ball for them if they want, if there was anybody, you know, but they could. Take Allentown Central Catholic. Is everybody at Allentown Central Catholic from Pennsylvania?
Not to my knowledge, no.
I mean, are non-Pennsylvania individuals participating in the NCAA, in the PIAA tournament? I mean, to me, that's got to be a basic. I mean, just a mere basic. You have to be a resident to participate. I don't care if you pay your money to the school. It doesn't matter to me. But you're from New Jersey, you know, you're in the Jersey tournament.
I just think if you create a class that's all by itself, then you don't have the issue at all. Because, well, I mean, technically, a charter school, couldn't a charter school have somebody from out of state?
That I don't know.
I don't either, for sure. But if you have the if you have a separate category for these private and charter schools, it's not really an issue to me anymore. And I don't mean anything negative to any of these schools. I mean, you know, Allentown Central Catholic, great basketball program.
You're just trying to eliminate competition. I got it.
But when you see it dominated by one type of school, it really tells you something.
Yeah, Michigan just got a great kid from down there. Muhammad Ali Abdulrahman.
Yes.
Who signed with Michigan. A really good player. Averaged over a 2,000-point scorer down there. So I will ask the question to appease you.
I appreciate that.
So, because the entire goal of the question is to open the door for Shikellamy to advance.
So open the door for anybody to advance.
Now, your questions are always pretty personal. it always seems to be an angle that opens the door for you to get more cash.
Well, I'm not going to deny that there's an open, that's a possibility. I mean, I'm not going to say that wouldn't happen.
If you're not,
that's a
Jurgen
big
Klinsmann.
Lie.
You'd be Jurgen Klinsmann.
That would be a big lie, and I can't in good conscience do that.
I'll ask her about that. See, the PIAA softball and baseball championships are here. I think Central Columbia is playing Paul DeGaleri in softball.
Yes, yes. The ladies from Central Columbia have had a really good run this year.
Yes, they have. A really good run. They've scored a lot of runs, too.
That you bet.
Scored a lot of runs. Yet, the most powerful area for softball in the entire state's here.
Really? Now, that I didn't realize.
Oh, my goodness. Do you realize in the last 10 years, Penns Valley, Paul DeGaleri, Phillipsburg, Osceola, Bellefonte, and State College have all won state championships?
I didn't realize that.
It's unbelievable. Paul DeGaleri played Phillipsburg, Osceola the other day in the state semifinal. They drew 1,300. Sold out at Beard Field. Sold out. They had people up in the hill. It was unbelievable how many people were at this softball game. This has been, unbelievably, this corridor in here has been the single best softball region in the entire state over the last 10 years. I can't explain it. I don't know why. Just, the way fate, luck, whatever it happens to be. But it's kind of stunning, isn't it? It's something you would not expect. So Central Columbia, Paul DeGaleri, that's the 5:30 game on Friday here. That should be quite a matchup.
That's Central Columbia, double A?
Central Columbia, I think, scored 10 runs their last time out, didn't they?
I believe so.
Yeah, they can hit. So, I know you're shocked that I even know something about this.
I am actually a little bit shocked, I must admit. I must admit.
Yeah, you're kind of taken aback here.
I have to step back for a moment.
Are you typing your letter of resignation?
I'm trying to find out. I'm trying to find out Central softball record right now.
People hand me a letter sometimes. They say, can you proofread this? I'll say, you misspelled resignation.
That's cold.
Hey, well, it's who I am.
And the other thing I was trying to find out, too, is the ladies, the girls, Danville girls lacrosse team had been undefeated going into state playoff run. And that, I believe, is their first year as a sanctioned PIAA team. They were, that is a great story there for that program.
Oh, sure it is. And I think it's more, you have a lot of great stories like that. That's a really good one. Really good one. Kings and Rangers tonight. The Kings can win the Stanley Cup in New York. Rangers will do whatever they can to stay alive, but the Kings have played really, really well. Jonathan Quick coming off his best performance in the playoffs so far. He was fabulous the other night. And offensively, the Kings are much better than they were 2 years ago when they won the Stanley Cup. 2 years ago, they were an opportunistic team. Now, they are an attacking offensive team. Spurs and Heat last night. The Spurs hit 16 of their first 18 shots, played awesome, beautiful team basketball last night. And, you know, I expect the Heat to come out tomorrow night with everything blazing. And right from the get-go, because they know that for them that is a must. They can't go to San Antonio down 3-1. That would be a very difficult deal to do. But there was a one play last night where I think it was during the 41-point first quarter. Spurs came down the floor, and not one time did the ball touch the floor, and all five guys with brilliant ball movement touched the ball, and it finished in a layup. And Mark Jackson said something I thought was hilarious. He says, awesome basketball, beautiful basketball. All five guys touched the ball, the movement, and the easy basket. He says, you'll never see that on SportsCenter. And Jeff Van Gundy says, why not? He says, it didn't end in a dunk. he ripped his Ooh, own company.
That's going to be a little smaller paycheck come the end of the week.
Yeah, I don't think he cares. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Bottom of the hour, we go in news. Sarah Bartlett, more on the Cantor defeat in Virginia last night. We've been talking about the uplifting story of the Philadelphia Phillies. I've noticed that the people have soared the more we talk about it.
Yeah, I feel warm and fuzzy talking about the Phillies.
You don't like their farm system, do you?
I used to like the farm system. Now, there's not a whole lot in the farm system.
When did you like it? And why?
I'll tell you what. You know when I stopped liking it? I stopped liking it probably late 90s when they stopped playing up in Scranton-Wilkesboro.
Okay. I see. Okay.
I watched Howard come up. I watched Utley come up.
Ever tell you a story about Howard in Batavia?
I don't think so.
I was talking to the trainer, and one of the jobs for the trainer is that when somebody is signs and gets there, is that it's their job to go to the airport and pick them up. So Ryan Howard had been drafted by the Phillies, finally signs, and this is before they had the signing rules you have today. More and more guys sign quicker because of the signing rules. And he goes up to the Buffalo International Airport to pick him up. He said he's the only guy he has ever picked up at the airport. Only one ever that was wearing a jacket and tie. Ever.
Interesting.
He said no guy before and no guy since. He is the only guy he ever picked up at the airport and was wearing a jacket and a tie. Does it mean anything? No, it says something, though, about... It says something, though, about his attitude about professionalism. How about that? It does say something about that. I think the Phillies rolled the dice on some long-term deals on critical parts of their championship team in 2008. They rolled the dice on a long-term deal on Ryan Howard because of the power. They rolled the dice on Chase Utley because Chase Utley's just a really good player. They rolled the dice on Jimmy Rollins, who had been an MVP before that and was in the prime of his career. They eventually rolled the dice on Cole Hamels. When he came up, he was the series MVP. They rolled the dice on Cliff Lee, Roy Halladay. I mean, that's what they did. You know, that's and Ruiz. That's where they decided the center of the team would be. Now, on paper, I don't disagree with those moves. On paper, they were the central figures in the Phillies winning the World Series in 2008 and getting to the World Series again in 2009. I mean, do you argue with that on paper? I mean, now, let's take what we now know in hindsight. Let's talk about 8 and 9 when you're in the middle of that run and you have to make decisions.
Here's the problem that I think really underlies everything here. The problem is they were very long-term deals, very expensive long-term deals. If they were expensive shorter-term deals, I don't think it would have been as bad. But my question is this, is what the Phillies are going through right now, is this the punishment for playing for the now, the last few years, those few years?
But you won a championship in 2008.
Right, but I'm saying, is this what happened?
But no offense, the now paid off.
It did, but what I'm saying is this the repercussions from that?
Maybe in part, but from 2000 to 2013, how many championships have the Yankees won?
I don't know. I can't count.
One.
Seems like there should be more than that.
Right, but they've spent a lot of money. They've won one. Red Sox have spent a lot of money. They've won three. Cardinals have won twice. The window is a very narrow window. Thus, to keep yourself at or near the top, to give yourself an opportunity, it's worth something, no question. That's why I've talked about the Steelers and the Patriots. I think it's been amazing the way they've stayed at or near the top. Look at the Miami Heat. When they had Shaq and Wade together, they were at or near the top. Shaq then moves on, gets old, moves on. They're left with Wade, and they're no better than okay for a period of time until they sign both LeBron and Bosch. Okay? I think when you have the chance to go for it, I think you need to go for it. I think when you're sitting there, take Houston. Now, Houston has to build for the future because, honestly, that's all they have. But I think when you're in that position where you're, you know, missing a part that can kind of send you over the top, you go and you get that part. And I don't blame them for that. Now, sometimes that part is in your own farm system. For the Red Sox, that part happened to be Xander Bogaerts. He was in their farm system. They won. And other times it just falls into place for you. But, I mean, if you want to mortgage 8 and 9 so that 14's better, I don't agree with that theory at all. I'd rather have 8 and 9 because I know how hard it is to win. And Phillies fans ought to know more than anybody. They've won 2 world championships ever. And they've been in business for over 100 years.
And they have the most losses of any professional sports team.
Right. And I'm saying, if anybody ought to know, okay, guess what? As much as you want to rip Ryan Howard or rip Jimmy Rollins or whatever, in 2008, that group helped deliver something that only one other Philadelphia team has ever delivered in baseball in terms of the Philly side of it. One. I mean, I think the Phillies started, what, in 1876? That sound right?
I'll take your word for it. You know better than I do. I'm not going to second guess you.
So in 138 years, you've won the World Series twice. But you'd rather have mortgaged 2008 and 9 so that 14 was more palatable?
No, I want it all.
You can't have that in today. Look at the Yankees. They've spent all this money the last 13 years. They have one championship. Okay? It's hard to win. That's why when you have a chance, you do go for it. Maybe you do mortgage the future to do it.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Sunbury Motors. Kevin Hearn, the Sunbury Motors Studio East today. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury. That's where you'll find the Hyundai and Ford dealership. And you'll also find a Kia dealership on Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. They'll make sure you have a great deal. As a matter of fact, right now is the time to look at a new Ford car, truck, or even a Hyundai or Kia, because they're running some great deals as they get ready for the 2015s to come in. A couple of weeks ago, Steve caught up with a former PR exec for the Phillies. We talked a little bit about Phillies history, Phillies classic announcers, and classic baseball announcers in general, and also about a brand new book.
You go back to the years at Shive Park, Connie Mack Stadium, all 33 years of the vet. Follow that up with Citizens Bank Park. Well, there's one guy that has all three in common, and that is Larry Schenck, the Baron. He's written a book entitled If These Walls Could Talk. Something tells me Larry as a wall observed and absorbed a lot of information over the years, and we are very pleased to have a man for 44 years associated with the Philadelphia Phillies, Larry Schenck. Larry, welcome.
Thank you. You're not at spring practice today?
No, nothing today. No, we're... I don't... In fact, the next really big thing I do, besides doing, obviously, this broadcast extravaganza every day, is obviously some Spikes baseball this summer, so...
Okay, all right. Spikes baseball.
Yeah. All right, so when did it first start crossing your mind that maybe I should keep some notes in life, that maybe somewhere down the road I could write a book?
Well, I didn't, as I went along all those 50 years, I didn't really think of it. But then when I stepped down as a media relations vice president in 2007, a lot of people in my family said, you got to write a book. And I thought about it and didn't think much of it until October 2012 when I sat down and started writing. And went to Florida for spring training. We had a place down there, so we spent 3 months down there in the winter. Gave me a lot more opportunity to write. So in February of 2013, I sent the manuscript to 5 different publishers. 2 rejected me. One was interested mildly. The other one was very interested, which was Triumph Books. And they said, well, we like your stuff. And I was looking at it more as an autobiography. We want more stuff, more stories about the Phillies. You have 15,000 words. We have to have 65,000 to 70,000 words. Can you do it? And I like challenges, so yeah. I said, I will do it. So I had from February 2013 to September of 2013 to come up with 65,000 or 70,000 words. And on this story. So I just started thinking more and talked to some of the people that I work with and talked to some former players, a lot of former players, and came up with more stories. And there it is.
What was the easiest part of this to write? And then conversely, what was the most difficult part to write?
Well, the easiest part was I did a lot of research to make sure I was actually factual. You know, I lived through all of that, but I wanted to make sure my mind wasn't playing tricks with me, you know, that it was really, because it's been a long time. But that was fun. That was kind of easy. The hard part was trying to come up with more stories, I guess. There were times last summer, maybe not at this time, but maybe in July, I'd be working at nighttime, late in the night, you know, what did I get myself into here? You know, and I don't like to write for numbers, you know. I just won't like to write, but I knew I had to get to 65,000 to 70,000 words, and I tried to take that out of my mind and just write, you know, and let it happen, and I did, you know. They took some things out because they didn't want an autobiography. They have these triumphant series of these books, If These Walls Could Talk. It's just not the Phillies, University of Michigan, New York Giant football team, and then the Dodgers this year, and the Tigers.
Yeah.
So that's why they wanted to do more storytelling. So, you know, and I lived with all those players for all those years, you know, from 1980. I guess the hardest part, really, now I think of it, Triumph wanted stuff on Jimmy Rollins, Ryan Howard, and Chase Utley. And I said, well, I haven't been around them since 2007. I don't have stories in them. I don't, you know, don't travel with them. I'm not in the clubhouse.
Right.
I'm not asking them to do things. So I decided to come up with the scouting reports of those guys, which is something people have not read. So I did scouting reports on those three, plus Pat Burrell and Cole Hamels and Chico Ruiz. I thought it was something. I like to write things that are different, and I like to be brief and to the point, and try to put some humor in it, make it light, and make it easy to read.
You also worked with one of the more interesting media groups, I think, in the country. I know when I was at, I went down to Dallas when Dick Girardi was inducted into the U.S. Basketball Writers Hall of Fame, and Dick was talking about working at a paper, for example, or in a building and around people were some of the legendary names. What was it like for you working as that conduit between players and a media that tried to push as far as they could?
Well, it was a real challenge, you know. Everybody thinks that New York and Boston are the media capitals of the world. They may be, but Philadelphia's right up there. We have a very aggressive media. It keep you on your toes because you have to be ahead of them, and you try to be more proactive than reactive, but it's difficult. And there are many times when you're in the clubhouse after a loss and you're standing there with 15 to 20 media members and you have no players. And now you have to go to the weight room or to the trainer's room or someplace and try to get players out. That isn't a picnic at all. And the worst team, I guess, was the 1993 team, that bunch of misfits. they spent after every game, especially at home, in the trainer's room, rehashing the game and so forth. So it was not fun to walk into a trainer's room saying, I need somebody to come here and talk to the media. You're kind of outnumbered, but Darren Dalton helped me a lot. He was a catcher and the leader of that team, and he would help. He said, I got ice on my knees for 5 more minutes, and Mickey, why don't you go out and help Darren? So that'd be really great. But it's a challenge. You can't see me, but I do have gray hair now, which I didn't at one time. You know, so I think that comes from it. And the media has evolved so differently. You know, when I started, everything was geared to the newspapers. You know, there was very little television. Was one game a week. You know, there was radio all the time. And then more TV came into being, and then the writers had to change the way they wrote the story. They weren't writing game stories anymore. They needed quotes. You had the clubhouse access after games, which wasn't there when I first started. And today, I mean, Twitter, and Facebook, it's mind-boggling, you know. And people talk about social media. Hey, I was in social media 50 years ago. I bought writers' drinks.
What?
I'm glad you have a sense of humor.
I think that's terrific. What was it like for you to, I mean, it became commonplace, but to handle the Steve Carlton situation?
Steve Carlton was the most cooperative athlete I've been around in 1972. He did everything. We run him everywhere.
Yep.
During the season and after the season. Later on, he got burned by the media, and he came to me one time. He said, I don't see why I need to talk to the media because they take everything I say out of context. If they're going to do that, there's no need for me to talk. He said, maybe be better off to become more creative writers and wrote stuff without my quotes. And the one thing that the media respected from Steve is his policy, and he didn't bend no matter what. Policy was policy. He did not do interviews. So I had Mike Schmidt, I had Greg Luzinski, I had Pete Rose, and Steve Carlton, and Tug McGraw. So there was Larry Bowe. There was plenty on the platter right there, and Lefty didn't talk. So it made it easier for me because the answer was no. You know,
right. What you mentioned Pete Rose. Talk about working around. Mike Schmidt had his own way. Pete Rose had his own way. Discuss the differences between the two.
Mike is kind of an introvert, a shy person, you know, a perfectionist. He was serious all the time. He was more outward going, had a lot of life. And he made Schmidt a better ball player because he got on him and rode him a little bit. And also boosted him, you know, praised him and patted him on the back. Pete Rose was a PR person's delight. He was available after every game, no matter if he had one hit, two hits, or no hits. I never saw a player with the concentration he did as a hitter, because if he had two hits, he didn't ease up. He was going to get three. If he had three hits, he was going to bear down and get four. And he was a pleasure to be with. He knew everything. He loved baseball, talked baseball, knew the other team's injuries and who's pot and who's not. And I said to him one time, you really know.
What did it mean to you that Larry Bowa wrote the forward?
Well, Larry was I have a lot of respect for Larry. You know, he is really a true blue Philly. I saw him as a skinny shortstop in spring training, and I never forget what Gene Mock said. I can see him catch the ball. I can see him run. And see him throw the ball. But when he hits, I don't hear anything. He was not a good hitter. He was really a weak hitter.
Right.
But he had so much drive in him, and he just drove himself into being a great ball player. I have a great deal of respect him as a manager and as a coach. I'm so glad he's back with us again. He is to be right underneath Richie Ashburn as some of the great icons of the Phillies history. I asked him if he would write it. You know, he said he would be glad to. He got the assistance of somebody else, but he put the words together, and it was really cool. So, you know, you need somebody to write a forward like that. My name is not that well known anymore because I'm not in the limelight anymore as a representative of the Phillies. So Larry Bowa's name means a lot.
Baron, it's you also went through the ballparks. Mack to the Vet and now Citizens Bank. What were the characteristics that you liked and disliked about each?
Well, Connie Mack Stadium was a place that I went as a child, and I loved going there. I just roamed all over the ballpark. I just loved to do that. And then I got to work there, and it was a baseball park, but it was very run down. There were no amenities for the fans. It was dirty. There was limited parking. Playing surface may have been the best in Major League Baseball. The press box was really antiquated. The elevator held about three people and went about, it was so slow getting up. And you had to take the elevator because the press box was mounted from the upper deck roof. You know, you had to wait a long way to go. The offices were small and antiquated and so forth. We get to Veterans Stadium, and we had to change the way we operated because we now had 65,000 seats to fill instead of 33. And Mr. Carpenter brought in Bill Giles, the best thing he ever did, to oversee the business aspect, and we completely changed our image and so forth. One thing I didn't like about the Vet, I had a nice office, but I had no windows.
Oh, jeez.
I didn't know if the world was out there, you know.
Oh,
but I was right next to the press box, so it was easy to go in and out of the office to the press box. The clubhouses were nice, plenty spacious and so forth. the AstroTurf I thought was great, but it became a problem because it's hot, very hot in the summertime. It was hard on athletes' knees and so forth. And then, you know, we didn't have much say in the building of Veterans Stadium. It was the property of the City of Philadelphia. But when we decided to get a new ballpark, we designed the whole thing ourselves with our architectural team. So we had a lot of input into the building and designing of Citizens Bank Park, and I think we did a tremendous job. It's just a beautiful ballpark. We're in the bad seat in the house. A lot of, you know, it's everything. We had history of the Phillies in there. Statues. It's just a great ballpark. And it's a ballpark. That's what we need again. We don't need 65,000 seats.
Exactly right. Of course, we can't go through and talk about any of this in the history of the club without talking about Harry Whitey and even back to Bai Sam. You obviously, you know, you talk about, you know, doing a lot of work with writers, but also there was a lot to do with radio and some with TV as well. What was it like working with the guys in the broadcast team?
Well, it was funny because I grew up listening to Bai Sam, and all of a sudden I'm working for the ball club with him, and he was such a nice gentleman. He was a straight play-by-play announcer, which is the way they did it. You know, there was no color no commentary like that. Strictly a play-by-play, telling what's happening on the field. Very nice gentleman. I'm sitting in the dugout at the Connie Mack Stadium in 1965, and Gene Mock's sitting there, and this blonde guy's walking across from the visiting dugout, which was the Houston Astros dugout, Colt 45, excuse me. Gene says to me, "Larry, who is this guy?" I said, "I don't know. I think his name is Harry Callis." He said, "Well, what does he do?" I said, "I don't know. Because I see him in the press box, sitting in the press box for almost the whole game." Well, I learned that I guess his first year with the Astros, he did one inning per game. So the other eight innings, he sat in the press box because he wasn't on the air. And nobody knew at the time that we would eventually have him in Philadelphia. And he and Whitey were the greatest broadcast team you could ever want. You know, they were terrific. They blended so well together. They loved each other, and I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that again. Whitey was a character, you know, really feisty, competitive type of personality. Great stories in the book about him. You know, Harry was just, I never heard of anybody say a bad word about Harry. And, you know, no matter what hour it was after every game, he signed autographs outside Veterans Stadium until the fans left. He never turned anybody down.
Right.
He was great. He loved Michael Jack Schmidt. So there were times when I was traveling with the team, and after the game we'd go to the bar, and I used to get Harry stirred up because I'd say that Bob Bailey's the best third baseman in the game, and he would go berserk on me. You know, who do you think you're talking about? Michael Jack Schmidt's the best, not Bob Bailey. He yelled at, or not yelled at, but be chastised in that voice of Harry Callis, you know, was just something. He loved the game. I talked to him one time, "Aren't you going to retire?" He said, "What would I do if I retired?" He didn't retire. He decided what he wanted to do.
Right. Yeah, my broadcast partner for football, Jack Ham, worked with Harry on Westwood when Harry would cross over. And he said, I'm going to tell you right now, Jack never said not one time a negative thing. He says he's just the nicest man. That's all he always told me, he's the nicest man.
Yeah.
In the end, when you write something like this and it comes to fruition and it takes you down memory lane, what was it like just to relive a life?
Well, you know, I was fortunate as a kid growing up in a little town in central Pennsylvania, Myerstown. I became addicted to the Phillies, and I always wanted to work for the Phillies, broadcaster or writer or whatever. And I was rejected by them three times. And finally, the fourth time, I was in the right place at the right time. And I didn't know what to do as a PR guy in 1964. There were no handbooks, there were no instructions. No manual, so I just did notes and stats and survived somehow, you know. When you get older, you do look back a lot. You know, I remember my father-in-law talking about his childhood and so forth, and I'm thinking, geez, I don't think I'm going to do that. But you do go back and you remember, and part of writing the book was a challenge of trying to remember all this stuff. and relive it somewhat. And I try to present it so people would understand what I went through, you know, what it was like. I had an office at Cunningham McStay, very small. I described what it was exactly like, you know, and it was fun. You know, I'd been involved with other publications over the years with the Phillies, so many of them. I co-authored a coffee table book on the history of the Phillies in 2010, but I never did something by myself.
Right.
And so this is my first solo book, and my family, I think, is more excited when it came out than I was. You know, I don't want to look at it because I'm afraid I'll see a mistake. Or, you know, I keep thinking, oh, geez, I forgot this, I forgot that, you know. Well, too late, you know. So now I'm trying to think of another book in a couple of years, but I'm still kicking, so we'll see.
Well, your book is entitled If These Walls Could Talk.
Right.
And I believe Larry is the walls.
Yeah, I'm the wall. Yeah,
you're the wall.
You know, and I told Triumph, if you're looking for dirt and sensational stuff, I'm not going to do it. That's the way I am. You know,
yeah,
that's for other people to do. I'm not going to criticize people because that's not the way I operate.
You know what, though?
I try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
You and I are very much the same way. People say to me, well, aren't you going to say something critical about it? Well, I don't feel the inclination to do it, so I know exactly how you feel.
Right, cool.
Yeah. Larry, it was an absolute pleasure, and this book is wonderful. And thank you for the time you gave us today. We appreciate it. And also congratulations on really a great career, because I know a lot of people that worked in Philadelphia appreciated your work for a long time.
Well, thank you. It's very kind of you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the air, and go Nittany Lions.
All right. Larry Schenk, If These Walls Could Talk, Phillies PR director and executive for 44 years. Our pleasure to have him on the show. And I hope for many of you Philly fans, it was a nice little walk down memory lane. We'll scroll.
Don't forget, if you missed any of today's show, or any show for that matter, the Steve Jones Show, go to stevejonesshow.com and click on the podcast. You'll be able to listen to it there 24/7. As a matter of fact, right after 5 o'clock is when you'll see the newest podcast come online at stevejonesshow.com. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at stevejonespsu and on Facebook, like us, Steve Jones Show. We'll be back tomorrow in the Sunbury Motors Studio on WKOK and on the WKOK app.